At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Welcome back to Star Search, where we reach for the stars and wish them success. Now, here's a great Star Search success story. See if you remember this young actor from the junior special 4 years ago.
Yeah, but Dad, I got this great new video game. You can fire real missiles at spaceships and watch them disintegrate in 3D. And you can blow up the entire universe. It's totally rad.
Well, that was when Keith Mitchell was 13 years old. Keith is now 17, and he's now Keith Coogan. New name, and look at this, a new teen idol. How about that, girls, huh? Welcome, Keith Coogan.
Tishrei 5750. Oy vey! Penthouse launches a Hebrew edition. Jane Pauley announces she's stepping down as co-anchor of Today after 13 years. Janet Jackson's Miss You Much is the month's biggest hit. The Die Hard with a Baby movie Look Who's Talking tops the box office. Lordy, lordy, Billy Graham gets a Hollywood Walk of Fame star while Jim Baker gets 45 years for fraud. And Monty Python's Graham Chapman kicks the bucket, shuffles off this mortal coil, runs down the curtain, and joins the bleeding choir invisible. But you don't care too much about all that because Halloween's a-comin', and you haven't finished your costume yet. Your friend Rhonda opted to go as a sexy Caesar salad with sensual low-cal dressing, and her friends, who are not quite your friends yet, are going as sexy Tom Selleck's mustache, sexy grand piano Michelle Pfeiffer slides around on in the Fabulous Baker Boys, and sexy the bear from the movie The Bear. You're feeling the pressure to go sexy, but are you there yet? Can you settle this internal teenage girl struggle? Do you have the experience and knowledge to put these thoughts into your own words? Or maybe just wait a week and see somehow if you can get a truer perspective on it and probably do it with better structure and grammar to boot. Yes, let's do that. For now, it's time to...
Listen to Sassy. First of all, we need to welcome our guest host, Megan McCafferty. Hello!
Woo! Welcome, Megan.
Hello! I've only been stalking you since the very first episode, so stalking works, kids.
That's right.
Thank you so much. As we know, Pam has deserted us. We do have the very early edition of Pam AI in the wings if we need it, but I think we're all happy that Megan's here to give us a helping hand.
Absolutely. And we did tease in our last episode that Kim Reed would be joining us. Unfortunately, she had a truly shocking internet outage, but it happened on a Wednesday.
It's sitcom-esque, frankly.
It truly is. And when we have her back for the October 1989 Fashion Etc. episode, she can tell us all the horror that she went through not having the internet for 5 days. I would die. But we are soldiering on without her, and we should just get into it. There's a lot to talk about.
What Now is up first, and cool girl of the month, Tanya Vogt.
Probably Vogt.
Vogt. 15-year-old from West Milford, New Jersey, campaigned to convince the local Board of Education to stop using basically styrofoam stuff inside of the school. And they were like, nah. And she's like, well, you know, I think everybody would pay a little bit more if we just use paper trays instead of these terrible polystyrene things you've got going. And they're like, all right, let's put it to the test. So they did. And most of the students paid that extra nickel for the trays that didn't destroy the earth. And then they changed their policy. And it seems like a drop in the ocean. But I was remembering, like, in Hawaii, like, what is this, 25 years later or so? Mm-hmm. They just now, like, stop using styrofoam. And that's, like, Hawaii, like, the first place that's like, oh, shit, there's a lot of shit around here that we shouldn't be putting into the environment. So, you know, good on her. Mm-hmm. When's the last time that you got a drink and it came in a styrofoam cup? I remember it was, like, a year ago. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Why am I getting a styrofoam cup? The only thing that styrofoam cups are good for is the scene in Jaws where Richard Dreyfuss tries to reciprocate the macho beer can crushing from Captain Quint with his styrofoam cup. That was the only good thing that ever came out of Styrofoam cups.
Anyway, good job, Tanya. She did this and everything was better forever. You are calling in to us from New Jersey. Do you have any comment about West Milford?
Well, actually, I have relatives that live in West Milford.
Oh. Oh, boy. Here we go.
It's kind of Real Housewives adjacent.
Okay.
Real Housewives are all like in Franklin Lakes area. Mm-hmm. So if you've watched The Real Housewives of New Jersey, which I have because I love all incarnations of the Real Housewives franchise.
Sure.
You have a good idea of like what West Milford is like.
So this was the last good thing anyone did there.
I was actually shocked that something environmentally conscious came out of West Milford, to be honest.
Another item, Deb's first flick is the headline, and it's telling us it was inevitable. Deborah Gibson is going to be in a movie called Skirts, directed by Kenny Ortega. He's gone on to direct a whole bunch of stuff, a lot of it musical. I believe he's involved in the High School Musical series as well. Unfortunately, when I read this, I thought, I don't remember a movie called Skirts ever coming out. That's because it didn't.
It did not.
But there was a musical version in March 2020. Womp womp. It's
kind of... Let's hear a little bit from that.
Skirts. Skirts.
I fell for that. I fell for it. I was like, oh, we're gonna, wow.
I'm a man of colors opportunity.
Wow.
She did release two songs from it to celebrate World Theater Day in March 2020. We'll link that in the show notes. But apparently the story is, takes place in 1964. Actually, that's all it says.
I can write a movie, apparently.
Plays a girl from a snooty suburban town. Her family moves to New York.
Has she been in any movies, Deborah?
She's played herself a lot, and she has acted on Broadway, but I don't think that she's done a film. I did look, though.
Well, still can happen for her.
That's right.
Her film debut.
Your very own Christian Slater, 5 inspired readers will receive a copy of the video Gleaming the Cube, the movie where Heather's babe Christian Slater plays a bleached blonde skateboarder. To win, send a limerick about Christian and or skateboarding to babe and then the address. I feel like they really missed an opportunity not printing these limericks because I'm sure they were all absolute gold. Mm. No, we don't see them in a later issue, unfortunately.
Because the tone is set with this poster. This is the most 80s into the 90s thing I've ever seen. Like, definitely go to Visual Aids and check it out. But you got Christian Slater front and center in his I'm in a video game character selection creation screen hairdo with the frosted tips and all that. We've got a guy with a gun behind him, an explosion behind them all, a cop car, and then in the corner, of course, him doing a sick trick on his board.
That's right.
So it's got fucking everything.
You know, they made up Gleaming the Cube.
Yes, they did.
They wanted it to sound like a cool skater term. And they're just like, I don't know, Gleaming the Cube. And they named a movie after that. I feel like this limerick is half written. It's like there once was a Christian named Slater who in this movie played a skater.
That's right.
You just got to do the da 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 da. If you don't like him, you're a hater. Like, I've got 3 out of the 5 lines. Yeah. So
I think the middle is, I thought it was a movie about skateboarding. It turns out it was about fraud or whatever it was. Like, that was the whole weird thing about that is I was expecting something along the lines of Rad or, you know, some sort of,
and there's some of that
surfing movie, but on skateboards.
Yeah.
But it really was like this weird small town mafia story that was just like, what is going on? This is not what I expect. Wasn't mad.
No, at the time we watched it, it was not available to stream. It now is. It's on Prime Video, and we'll link that in the show notes. We bought not only a 2-pack of Gleaming the Cube and Pump Up the Volume on eBay, we bought the cheapest DVD player that we could find to play it on, so now we have that. But when I looked up the link to Gleaming the Cube on Prime, I got the pleasure of reading the extremely AI-crafted blurb on that page. I'm going to read it for everyone now because it's wonderful. The interest of Brian, comma, is his skate hyphen board. His adoptive brother, a Vietnamese boy, is studious and staid. There's a comma splice in there, of course, after skateboard. One day he comes into contact with a fellow countryman who deals with assistance to the Vietnamese who are fighting against the communist regime. But the drug and food trade hides an arms trade. Discovered the traffic, comma, the boy is killed. Then the brother sets out in search of the killers. That is what happens. It's just very poorly written.
I feel like that was translated from and then back to something. It has that kind of tone to it. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I kind of want that for all the movies I watch. Like, that could be a feature of IMDb, plot synopsis from this crazy machine as a second option. Yes, please. Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood Association of San Mateo County in California is paying teenagers who have been pregnant $10 a week for not getting pregnant again. That's not a bad racket, if you ask me. I did some number crunching.
Yep.
And if you can get pregnant and then have an abortion, hear me out.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, so, we're listening.
All right. All right. Let me frame this another way.
Oh, boy.
$99. This is 1989. Mm-hmm. $99, according to the 1989 Sears Wish Book, for a Nintendo action set. That is a Nintendo, two controllers, the Zapper gun, and the two-in-one cartridge, Super Mario Brothers 1, and Duck Hunt. And now you're going to want a few other games, so I'm going to throw in Blades of Steel, Castlevania, and Defender of the Crown, $36 each, which adds $108 to the total.
Okay.
So that's 13 weeks worth of not being pregnant for the console after tax.
Right.
Another 12 weeks after tax for your additional three games to round out your game collection. That's only 23 weeks, less than a half a year of just keeping your legs shut, and you get a free Nintendo and a decent collection of games to start you off. You got a decent home arcade setup.
And furthermore, once you have that, that's even more incentive to not get pregnant again, because you don't want some jerk kid hanging around.
Or on the flip side,
yes,
the Nintendo, and you got Blades of Steel, that's a very violent hockey game. You got Castlevania, everybody loves a good Castlevania game.
Right.
And you got Defender of the Crown, which is more of a slow burn kind of strategy game. But anyways, at least those first two are going to attract the boys. So it could backfire on you. This could be the last non-pregnant investment that you make.
Wow.
Wow.
It's a very heteronormative read, Dave.
No, it's a very video game centric read.
Okay, fair enough.
So I've got to turn my head on an angle here for Star Search Casualties. I've been trying to make Kevin Coogan forever happen as a sign-off since, I think, episode one.
Mm-hmm.
My avatar is Kevin Coogan forever, so that's why I wanted to take this one.
Yep.
Now, Christina says, one can safely say that Star Search is not the classiest hour on TV. I got to stop her right there, because I didn't even do a deep dive. I did a shallow dive into Star Search, because you don't have to go deep to find the magic of Star Search. Star Search is incredible on so many levels. Do yourself a favor and just Google Star Search episodes from the 80s. But I found myself, there was a lyrical ballet duo, James and Kathy, who performed a song to Looking Through the Eyes of Love, which, as you all know, is the theme from Ice Castles.
Of course.
And we're not talking the Melissa Manchester version. We're talking the version that Lexi skates to in the movie of the same name, Ice Castles.
Mm-hmm.
The aerial movements that James and Kathy made to simulate Lexi as she's building up speed for that triple axel. I swear to God, I cried. I watched it. I watched it three times and I cried. This was only considered a 3.5-star worthy performance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what a 4-star performance could do to me. Like, I really don't know. And I'm afraid to find out. So, Star Search, Kevin Coogan. As you heard in the opening clip, Ed McMahon, having a very revisionist history of Star Search's relationship to Kevin Keith Coogan Mitchell.
Yes.
He didn't win on the show, which is the whole point of this piece, is it's all people who've lost on Star Search.
Mm-hmm.
So Tiffany is one of the people mentioned. She performed as Tiffany Renee.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually shocked that Christina did not take this opportunity to like drag her even harder.
Yes.
Basically just said that she sang a cover song, but like they all sing cover songs on Star Search.
Yeah. Why would you sing an original?
Brian Bloom is also mentioned. We all remember Brian Bloom.
What about his mom?
And his mother, yes.
His mom and the naked man statues and him negging Christina and just being a dick.
I think if Brian Bloom was on Star Search, he would perform and he would get 4 stars. And then he would zip down his Brian Bloom skin and it would, of course, be Mrs. Bloom underneath. Gotcha. There never was a Brian Bloom.
So he's actually having a thriving career as a voice artist for video games.
Yeah.
So I guess good for him.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched Star Search and every episode had a gem. Garcelle Beauvais showed up as a spokesmodel. Do you remember the spokesmodel category?
Of course.
where they would do the video photo shoots to like Kenny G.
Wow. Yeah.
So many new wave bands trying to beat Sawyer Brown and get them the hell off the show because they were on the show for like 15 episodes. There was that little man, Sam Harris, who sang Over the Rainbow wearing the tux and the... I'm sorry, I'm turning this into a Star Search podcast. Mm-hmm. Just shut me down.
Well, the good thing about Star Search in its time was that it's sort of like that magical first season of American Idol.
Yes.
Before everybody tried to game the system with the bad singing and all that kind of stuff to be intentional. Like the naivety is at 100% here in Star Search 80s. And I feel like that comes through in a lot of the clips. Like these are genuinely hopeful people, genuinely having middling talent, hoping to hit it big. And once in a while, you get somebody who's really there and do it. But like it feels grassroots and organic in a way that nothing ever could. Like these days.
Yeah, it's too polished. Yep. You're right.
Little item sideways again. John Cryer, whose most memorable role was the cute geek Ducky in Pretty in Pink, will be starring in his own CBS sitcom, The Famous Teddy Z, this fall. By the time this magazine came out, it had already premiered. John plays the Hollywood agent of a famous cranky actor based on Marlon Brando. The show was probably ahead of its time. It was sitcom very insidery about show business, obviously, given the premise. It only lasted 20 episodes, one season. But Alex Rocco, RIP, won an Emmy after its cancellation. This one is still regarded as like one of the big what happened here failures of a show that should have been bigger. But I tracked down the pilot and we'll link that. It's on YouTube. I vaguely remember this show.
The only imagery that Teddy Z brings up to me is the Zellers teddy bear.
Oh.
Which I believe was called Teddy Z.
Yeah.
Or Zeddy. I can't remember. Canadians, 720 Sassy Go. Let me know about the Zellers bear. Sassy glossary definition number 19 is lounge, verb meaning to hang out. Thanks, Sassy. Way to go.
Frog power.
Frog power.
All I have to say about this is that the Student Against Dissection hotline will be mentioned four more times in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a coincidence.
Hotline? Like, what do? Like, you're about to have to dissect something, so you run down to the ground floor of your school to the one payphone they have, and you call it up. It's like, I'm in trouble. I've got 3 minutes till I have to dissect a frog. Send out the SWAT team. Like, what's going on here? Why is it a hotline? I don't know quite.
Well, guess what, Dave? You're in luck because you're going to find out more about the Students Against Dissection hotline.
Oh, she's good. Look at her tease that.
In our feature, again, don't want to spoil.
All right. I'm excited.
The main point of this blurb is to let everyone know about a CBS school break special, The Jennifer Graham Story, which airs in mid-October.
Love her crackers.
It is the true story of a 15-year-old girl who refused to dissect a frog in biology class, and then she set up this hotline. And I found this thing on YouTube. We will link it in the show notes. And I'm so thrilled that someone on YouTube, this maniac, calling him or herself the after-school specialist, is basically doing just that, running down these lost gems of 80s and 70s and some early 90s after-school specials and CBS school break specials, because they are really hard to find and sometimes they are tremendous.
Oh, cosign, absolutely.
We don't have a hit this month. They didn't do any grade inflation. They did not call something 5 stars. It was really a 4-star movie. There just is not a hit. But our highest starred movie is The Big Picture with 4. This is a Kevin Bacon, another showbiz satire. We tried to watch this during quarantine, Dave, as I recall, and we made it about 20 minutes in and we're like, this is not hitting, and we turned it off.
Wow, I don't remember that.
That's how forgettable
it
is.
That's how bad it was.
Did we immediately move to Quicksilver and that's why it's all, it got erased by Quicksilverness?
We watched something else because it was so dull.
Well, it's troubling. I'm not sure if this is troubling for the makers of The Big Picture or it's troubling for me that I can't remember something that just happened relatively recent in my own life. But, you know, here we are.
Yeah. Next, Casualties of War, 3 stars. Personally, I'm sick and tired of movies about the Vietnam War, says Christina. does not say why. I mean, admittedly, this was a time when there were a bunch. The success of Platoon and Full Metal Jacket, I think, spawned a lot of imitators or people that were trying to draft in their wake.
But also on the other end of the spectrum, Rambo.
Right.
I mean, not being crass. I mean, it generated $1 billion. So they're like,
it did.
Vietnam, things exploding, guns, shooters. Yes.
True.
The Karate Kid Part 3. I've never seen this movie, I think. I may have seen Part 2. Definitely saw Part 1. This is the third one. They don't really care for it too much. It's a 3-star review. Their main complaint is that Daniel, who's supposed to be 18, is being played by an actor who is half again that age at 27, which is a fair complaint.
It is.
And he's still playing that 18-year-old in Cobra Kai, which is something they don't mention too often, but that is the actual plot. He is an 18-year-old married.
With a 16-year-old daughter.
Anything happens in Karate Town. I just mention this because, like, seeing all this through the prism of Cobra Kai, which is obviously the best thing to come out of all of this,
yes,
nails everything that was weird and dumb about all of this back in the day and translate it to something that actually is compelling today, which is, you know, kind of hard to pull off. I still don't understand who everybody they've introduced in Cobra Kai is in the movies. Mm-hmm. Like, they mentioned the main plot of this one is Daniel and Mr. Miyagi open a bonsai tree store, which is like, didn't I have any friends to say, hey, just listen, like, this is just a really bad idea. Nobody's really buying bonsai trees, at least not in volume. I mean, somebody in the family gets one and everybody else is like, that's a lot of work for a tiny tree. I don't think I'm going to get one. And then you go out of business. Like, that would be the movie, and it's 15 minutes long tops. But I guess this is the one where he goes to back to Okinawa, and that's why the Okinawan character is
I thought that was two.
I think that's the second one.
See, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Anyways, I was just tickled pink by the fact that a main thrust of the storyline is opening a bonsai store, which is the dumbest thing I've heard all week.
You know, if he's still running that store, then he's paying himself because, as we know, Daniel in Cobra Kai gives away a free bonsai tree to everyone who buys a car at his dealership.
I'm sure that bonsai store was destroyed by rogue Karate Town
ne'er-do-wells
in between seasons.
That's
nothing
right.
In Karate Town that you love can last. That's what I've learned from Cobra Kai. Forget it, Jake, it's Karate Town.
We should also note we are recording this on Ralph Macchio's birthday. He is 61.
Jeez.
Yeah. Wow. He looks good, other than wig.
Yeah, big head of real hair he's got on the show really is impressive.
He's clearly wearing a hairpiece in Cobra Kai, but other than that, he looks quite spry for 61.
Sure.
God bless.
God bless.
Our bomb for October 1989 is called True Love, which is a bummer. I couldn't find it to watch the whole thing. I did watch the trailer. It stars Annabella Sciorra, very young, and Ron Eldard, future crush object from ER, among other things. Vicky does not care for this, and she says in almost at the end of the story, it's about a young couple getting married. Mikey and Donna have a lot of stuff to work out all in a week, a theme that could have been interesting or poignant or something if it hadn't been illustrated to death with moronic situations like they're not agreeing on the type of potatoes for their wedding reception. Really? Well, Vicky, potatoes are important, actually. This is something worth fighting about. And if you and your partner are not aligned on potatoes, it's a bellwether for the success of your marriage.
Potatoes are only good when they're roasted or fried.
Ooh.
Baked potatoes are an affront to God.
Ooh.
And
we disagree.
I'd like to file for divorce.
This is it.
If you don't have something crispy surrounding a potato, it's not living in its own dead skin, then I don't want to eat it.
Oh, I love mashed potatoes so much.
Oh, man. Mashed potatoes are just like, it's nothing.
No.
You might as well be eating a cloud.
Yeah. Cloud with butter.
Where do you stand on potatoes?
Well, you know, I'm Irish, so just the mention of potatoes brings me great sadness.
Awkward. So. She lost a lot of people to potatoes. Damn fungus, I think.
Actually, I don't even know.
I think it's fungus. I think it was fungus.
That is Misty Morning, Albert Bridge, from the Pogues album Peace and Love, a 4-star review in this issue from Mike. I like the Pogues, but clipping that song, it was remarkable how much you could absolutely sing Fairy Tale in New York over that. Like, that's just, it's a lot of the same thing. If that's a thing yes. you like, it's great. If not, you don't care. But yeah, it's their music is very samey.
Whenever I hear a song by the Pogues, I'm like, I am not mad at that. But I would never actually press play on the Pogues myself. It's like when you're at a restaurant or a bar or something like that, and it comes on, you're like, yes, the mm-hmm. Pogues. But at home, no, not the Pogues. I can't really explain it better than that. Always happy to hear it. Never want to actually start it up.
It has definitely been played at Fitzmaurice McCafferty family parties. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that.
All right.
Yeah. The ones with no potato salad.
Like my story.
Since almost the very beginning of Sassy Magazine, Christina has been working overtime to make Ziggy Marley happen. She has mentioned reggae a lot. She profiled him. She had a whole article, I believe, in 1989 about the different reggae artists that you should definitely know about. And then she has this review for 3 stars for Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers, One Bright Day. And one of her critiques is, one bad song comes to mind, Herb-An Music, in which the Zigster just repeats the title constantly throughout. Well, she likes Black My Story, which we also just heard, and that does the same thing. Like, reggae is just kind of repetitive. I'm not as against it as our absent Pam is.
I hate reggae. Thank you, Pam AI.
Much like the Pogues, it's sort of like, if this is the kind of thing you like it a lot, and if not, it's never going to cross your turntable or what have you.
This was the soundtrack to every, like, cool girl stoner party in uh-huh. high school. And that's why I'm like, oh, yeah, of course, that's why Christina likes it.
You were one of a kind. Wanna never give in. Even when they burn a prize on your head.
That is from White Lion's album, Big Game. It is a 1-star review, yet not the bomb. Eked out a non-bomb review from Anne. I think she's correct. I just want to go on record and saying I hate unimaginative pop metal. It is sort of the worst of the worst because especially when somebody in the corner of the bar is really enjoying it and you're like mad at them liking this bad music. It's really annoying.
Yeah,
which means that listening to this album was pure torture. I'd rather listen to Donny Osmond records at 45 RPM than be forced to listen to this unoriginal and uninspiring trash called Big Game. Take that, White Lion. Let's put it to the test. I didn't mind that at 45 RPM, to be honest with you.
The fact that White Lion called their first album Pride and their second one Big Game, they are really not leaving themselves a lot of room.
King of the Jungle.
Yep.
Ow, my foot hurts from this thorn.
The main event, M-A-N-E.
Yeah, the main event, yeah. I know we've already had something from this person because that song is exactly the same as the song we played
about
a year on those podcasts, and it all just came right back. Freeze frame jump. That song is the soundtrack for a commercial for a digital watch, and as the cool guy showing off the digital watch with all the buttons on it. Or maybe it's a watch that plays Pac-Man, one of those. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that's the song they play. And while he's showing it, there's all these like color form 80s and 90s like little shapes that fly off as he's using it to show how exciting it is. Like, you know, teal swiggles and yellow triangles and pink dots. Woo! Oh, yeah. Check out my digital watch. It plays Pac-Man and Galaga. Boop, 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 boop. That's this song.
Stacey Q, for the record.
Oh, yeah. Her.
One to watch. I don't know where this is going to land in Dave's judgment. I think he would see this guy's face and know that he had seen him before, but not necessarily know what his name is. Dave, is that accurate?
Inaccurate. I know who this is.
Oh.
I know who this is because of the movie Swimming with Sharks.
That's right.
That is why I know this is Frank Whaley.
At the point that he is covered in sassy, he is...
Do you think Frank Whaley's home has got, like, seafood netting in the corner coming out of the ceiling and starfish on the walls and shit
he's
like
really
that?
He's really leaning into it.
I would love to know that that is true, that he basically, his aesthetic is 1975 seafood restaurant.
Yeah.
And, like, the mayor from Jaws sits in the corner with his anchor's blazer. Like, he fits just right in there. He's the chef. Perfect.
Roy Scheider comes in and he crushes the styrofoam cup.
Oh, well, that's first of all, wrong actor. But what he does is he comes in and he shoots he shoots the air tank and he blows up the restaurant every night.
Right.
It's sort of like it gave him the idea. They gave Spielberg the idea for his dive restaurant where the whole restaurant dives every 5 seconds. That's an actual thing. Look it up.
Oh, you love to bring up Dive. You love to bring up Dive. You love it.
Dive is really my, like, Dave's alternate universe sliding doors thing where he got trapped in middle America and his genuinely favorite thing in the world was the Dive restaurant and he never stops talking about it. And then he goes and votes for Trump. That is what... Dive restaurant represents. There's a sliding door somewhere where Dive was even more important to me, where I'm not a good person. I'm just saying.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I was only thinking, like, there's an alternate universe where Dive was a huge success, like, on the Chili's or Applebee's scale.
And then they franchise it out to other ideas,
and then
there's, like, Free Dive, which is like a plane, like, doing the comet vomit routine while you eat. Fantastic. There's, what do we got? We got submarines, planes, trains. We've got the one restaurant where it's like Bigfoot the truck, where the restaurant jumps over a ramp every so often and crushes other restaurants beneath it.
Yeah.
<That's> yeah. Just... Dave develops incredibly expensive high concept restaurant idea on the fly. Tara, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing about this podcast surprises me anymore, but I'm also just making a note to add a link to Dive because no one knows what we're talking about.
Okay.
Anyway,
well, very quickly.
No,
I want to explain it. So very quickly, in Century City, I think it was in LA.
It was in Century City.
Yeah.
It was at the Century City Plaza.
That's right. It's not called that anymore. But
no, it's not.
Steven Spielberg owned a restaurant. It was called Dive. You walk into it. It looks like the inside of a fanciful submarine, sort of like a Jules Verne sort of thing going on.
Yes.
And you go in there and you eat. And here's the thing. Their vegetarian sandwich was one of the best vegetarian sandwiches I've ever had. So it wasn't just like all concept, no execution on the food. The food, at least what I had, was delicious. Anyways, every, I would say, 10 or 15 minutes, all the lights dimmed down. The red klaxons come on, meow, 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 dive, dive, dive. And then, like, the whole ship dives and there's all this shit happening. And it's the dumbest thing ever while you're eating. I fucking ate it up with a spoon, almost literally ate it up with a spoon. I loved it so much. And then it went out of business the next year. And I was genuinely a little broken up about it. It was the precursor to my soup plantation malaise years later.
We can't go down that road. Back to Frank Whaley, which is what we were supposed to be talking about. At this point, he's 26. The breakthrough movie that will make the teenage girls aware of him is still 2 years off. That would be Career Opportunities, opposite Jennifer Connelly, inside a Target in 1991. Very thin premise of a movie by John Hughes. But anyway, we linked a bunch of the stuff that they mentioned here in the show notes. One of the titles that they talk about is Cold Dog Soup, in which he plays a stockbroker who falls in love with a dead dog. And I would go, well, that sank away, never to be seen again. Nope, it's on the Criterion Channel, this thing. I have not seen it, but we will link both that and an introduction to it from when they played it on IFC by one Mr. Vin Diesel.
Wow. Well, you know,
mm-hmm.
Cold Dog Soup's all about family.
Speaking of Vins, he is in an upcoming movie that I have seen teased about 5,000 times because it also co-stars Vincent Young. This movie's called 3 Days Rising. It's like a weird Edgar Allan Poe thing. The reason that I follow Vincent Young on Instagram is that he was a late era addition to Beverly Hills 90210. He played Noah Hunter. He is one of the weirdest men alive. I'll say that. He's super duper weird. And he will recycle an Instagram photo with like a completely unrelated caption, like anytime, any place. I've seen there's one picture of him like in an Argyle sweater vest with nothing underneath, like looking to the side that he has posted, I swear to God, like 6 times since I started following him. He also at one point was written up possibly by himself to like one of those fake build a news story things that you used to see on The Good Fight, where someone was like, what I'd like to see is Vincent Young playing James Dean. Vincent Young is in his 50s. Like, the time has passed for you to play James Dean. I'm sorry about it, dude. But anyway.
James Dean died famously young. It's what we know about him.
It's one of the main things people know about
James
Dean.
He
died in his 20s.
Yeah.
Anyway, again, back to Frank Whaley. We keep deviating. I'm excited to know that Dave knows who this guy is. But would you consider, do you think this is a one to watch that deserves the name?
Yeah, I would say this is a success. Not on the Brad Pitt level, but
sure.
I know who he is and he's still working. He's still acting. So he continues to be one that you could watch. I will say that he seems to be at this age and then forever on, like already in his 40s or maybe 50s.
Yes.
That could be the choice of characters he plays.
Yeah.
After sort of his teeny bopper stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he settled into his Larry David-ness like soon after this article is written and
wow.
has, you know, and that's just who he is and that's fine. To see him in a teen magazine now is kind of funny because he's like, I would never expect them to put Frank Whaley in it.
Yeah.
But I agree that he is one to watch, but just not like one to watch for teenage girls, maybe.
I'm going to say you're the first person ever alive to compare Frank Whaley to Larry David.
Okay.
Our feature this month is, does River's dog eat meat? And other burning questions. It's fate that I am guest hosting this episode because River Phoenix is to me what Johnny Depp is to Pam.
Okay.
Perhaps was.
Yes. I had this photo of him with the golden hair lock and the grubby maroon sweater on my wall next to the River Phoenix as a babe toddler photo. That was the early issue of Sassy. I had this Q&A. You can't see me. I'm making air quotes. I'm using that term lightly. Was preserved for safekeeping in my Phoenix file, spelled with PHs.
Sure.
Phoenix file, which was doubly clever because I considered myself a Phoenix file, an expert on all things River Phoenix. My best friend and I celebrated Phoenix Day every August 23rd, 1970. Didn't even have to look that up. I remember. Had the book Hero to Heartthrob that was featured earlier in the issue. So the point is, River Phoenix was one of those crushes that I had that it was like, I was almost afraid to meet him because I was like, if we meet, he's going to fall in love with me and I'm going to have to give up meat. My favorite restaurant is
Dive.
Sizzler. So that's probably going to be a problem.
Hang on. Hold the brakes. Pause.
I loved a Sizzler.
Sizzler?
Buffet. I loved a Sizzler buffet when I was in high school. Oh,
can you explain? Because I've never been to a Sizzler just because where I live, when I never had the opportunity. But I will say in my youth, and maybe this is a good comparative, my favorite restaurant to go to was Ponderosa. Mm-hmm. Have you been to a Ponderosa?
That was another one.
Is it similar?
Very similar. Very similar. I was going to say,
my
three favorite restaurants were like Sizzler, Ponderosa, and one Steak and Ale. Okay. I was a red meat eating teenage girl.
I was never really big on the meat stuff. I was a weird kid. I loved salad bars. I mean, I still do. obviously.
Yes.
How many times have we groused about Sue Plantation dying on this episode? Now it's twice. But Ponderosa had the same thing. It was like one of the first ones, like bigger chains to do that back in the late 70s. And when my parents announced that we were going down to the Pendale Plaza adjacent mall to go to the Ponderosa that was there, it was the happiest time of this little boy's life.
They're always in a mall. I think they had to be in a mall. Like, I don't think I ever saw a Sizzler or a Ponderosa not in a mall. And you never got the entree. You always got the buffet. Like, what? Only fools would get the entree.
Can we? I'm serious. I am up for a additional content podcast about buffets of the 70s and 80s, because I could go deep on strategy, how you fill your plate, what you eat when, what you order,
absolutely,
how you get your soda drinks, everything about it. I could talk hours about it. River Phoenix, continue. I'm sorry.
So I was redolent of meat. So I was like, if we meet each other, that's going to be hard. It's going to be hard at sacrifice. So this is not a Q&A. This is River Phoenix fanfic, like the River Phoenix fanfic that my best friend Tanya and I wrote in ninth grade. And if we had had the term fanfic back then, you sure bet we would have spelled it with PHs.
Do you still have the fanfic?
I do not. Oh. Because I gave it back to her.
And we lost her to the potato famine, right?
So I had her fanfic and we met up and I gave them back to her. And I wish I did. But you know what? It wouldn't read that differently from lines like, what do art and science mean if the earth is falling apart, if we feel no responsibility to give it space? Okay, like, we wrote that same shit. Like, this is so written by his PR people. It's clearly a quid pro quo. The Students Against Dissection hotline is mentioned 4 times, like, in the last 3 paragraphs. And then, of course, there's the telltale giveaway. There's one phrase in this. Tara, you pointed it out, that clearly was like, this is a middle-aged publicist trying to write in a River Phoenix voice, because the Jive Talk line, where he's like, this issue is more important than Jive Talk about my career or personal life. I'm like, what in the middle-aged publicist bullshit is this?
No, I think he really said that. I think that was still like a term of art at the time, especially for someone who probably like wanted to style himself as like a modern day Jack Kerouac type. Like, all of this read completely sincere. I never thought it was his publicist. I thought this is not just him. It's the most him he can be, because he doesn't want to talk any about his projects. He wants to talk about something that's important.
That is fascinating, because I read it and was like, he's in on it, but it's crafted in a river in it to be so River Phoenix-y that it like it can't be him. And there's no way that Christina asked those questions, because like they'll say like, oh, he came to us, it was his idea. Like, I know, because I'm such a maniac and I know all these things about River Phoenix, that 2 years down the line, Christina will interview him and his hip dirty hippie band, I think she titled it.
Mm-hmm.
And just, there's no acknowledgement that they'd ever talked before. I feel like there would have been something like, oh, you know, this is the second time that I've chatted with River. She never did. She didn't write these
questions. The same thing with the Robert Downey Jr.'s second interview. They don't mention the first one.
Good point.
I don't know. I think that they were like, he'll talk to you, but he only wants to talk about this. So she prepared questions that were going to let him just go off. And he did.
And you have to mention that damn hotline and What Now, too.
Yes.
Like, River will not do this unless that hotline is mentioned 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure that was some agreement.
But look, I defer to your superior knowledge of all things River.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
She is the caretaker of the Phoenix Files.
River Phoenix, hero and heartthrob. I mean, I have both this and Last Night in the Viper Room on my bookshelf, so...
Jeez.
Well, in answer to my earlier question, what the hell can the hotline do for you? Apparently, this is what it does. Yeah, what would you tell a student who doesn't want to dissect animals but is afraid of flunking biology class? That's why the dissection hotline is there, to advise you about your rights and help you find alternatives to dissection. The hotline can also put you in touch with a lawyer if you need one. Wow, this escalated quickly. If enough students start to challenge dissection, then teachers will look for other ways to teach biology. This is true. And that's how change begins. I have no argument with what he's doing or you know, the reasoning behind it. But just, I just like the idea of like a Simpson-esque team of lawyers, you know, like on a fire truck racing to the school,
yes.
You know, at the moment he called, you only got 30 seconds before the knife's got to go into his skin. Hop on it.
I also like that it's like, if you need one, doesn't specify why you might need one. Like, if you decide to stab your teacher instead of a frog, I did not call the dissection. I dissected a worm and a frog and a fetal pig.
Oh, that's it. That's the order.
They made us do worm, and then I said I wasn't going to do it again, and I didn't.
Wow.
Really?
Good for you.
You didn't need to call the Students Against Dissection hotline.
Maybe somebody else beat me to it. Maybe there was a raid the week before, and I didn't know about it. Three teachers were shot, two were killed, and they never came back. That's why we don't do dissection anymore.
Next time, Megan will be back, Kim Internet Willing will join us, and we will all be talking about the fashion, etc., of the October 1989 issue. Shine up your hair, dress like a Flintstone, throw shade at the other teen magazines that are shamelessly ripping Sassy off, and more. For my plug this week, if you fondly remember a parent around this time in your life bringing you to a video store on a Friday night to pick out a movie or a video game for the weekend, you might find yourself drawn to Netflix's new sitcom Blockbuster. I caution you to be wary of that feeling in my review at VanityFair.com, which we will link in the show notes.
And if you're looking for post-sassy teen angst, you can check out the 20th anniversary editions of my Jessica Darling series, starting with Sloppy Verse.
You can find a link to that in your show notes, including links to all our socials. The podcast is available at Listen to Sassy on Instagram and Twitter, as is Tara at Tara Ariano. Pam AI is at Pamela Ribbon. And Megan is somewhere on the internet, but she's being crafty and spooky about it. What's her deal? What's she hiding? What's in the Phoenix Files? You can support the podcast for only $5 a month by joining the Listen to Sassy Club. A whole bunch of perks. Go to listentosassy.com/club to read all about them. And you can also lend us a hand for free by rating and reviewing us on the podcast app of your choice. And just to keep track, it is currently, we're asking for 17-star reviews.
That's right.
Going to the video store on Friday, I remember the first time my dad took me to the Thorold Video Center, which was at the end of our street. It was like back when all video stores were owned by mom and pops. Mm-hmm. All there was no chains at all.
That's right.
And each one was his own thing. We went down there and I was like so excited because we were renting. This is before we even had a VCR. So we were renting the VCR and you got VCR and six movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you got it for like a whole week or something like that. Like it wasn't even like by day then. Just like, you know, people. So we got them and got whatever. And we watched them all after 3 days because it was like, oh my God, movies at home. Let's watch them. So we went back to get a couple more movies while we still had the VCR, and my dad only let me select things from their dollar shelf. The dollar shelf. I was so sad because there's nothing good on the dollar shelf. It wasn't like, even if you wanted to, like, as a kid, like, I've heard the kids talk about Chuck Norris, maybe a Chuck Norris film, but like the only Chuck Norris film on the dollar shelf was like Code of Silence. You weren't getting your like Delta Force and Rambo ripoff Chuck Norris on the dollar shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Believe you me, you were not. You got just crap. It was very sad.
Mm. Yeah.
What was your childhood video store like, Tara?
It was funny because when I was reviewing that show, I was like mentally flipping through all of them there. I don't remember which ones we went to in Regina, hold for giggles. But, when we moved to St. Catharines, there was one that was nearby that I could ride my bike to. And that was where I rented like all of, the Monty Python tapes that they had when I got into that, when that was my obsession, all the Beatles movies, when that was my obsession, many, many movies that were mentioned in Sassy for sure. And then when we moved houses after that, there was one around the corner and it was a Jumbo Video, as I recall. And that was like a superior one because they had free popcorn that you could have in a little teeny bag while you walked around. But Dave, while I was researching that article, I discovered that do you remember That's Entertainment on Lake Street?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It closed this year.
Holy shit.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Wow. This is I think it slowly turned into like a collector store, though.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure they had Funko Pops. I'm sure it's like going to Barnes & Noble or whatever, where there's like 18 books and then 6,000 kinds of stationery. Mm-hmm. Megan, what about you?
Ours was called Captain Video.
Uh-huh.
And it was in somebody's house.
Okay.
Like, it was a split level house, and the bottom level was the video store.
Oh, even better. The one I was talking about, there's a door. When they opened the door behind the counter, you could see the grandma watching TV. It was one of those things.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I used to go there and hound the owner for like the promo posters for the movie. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I desperately wanted the 16 candles poster, and I was like, please don't give it to anybody else, please, 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 please. And I would show up like every day, until finally he was like, Jesus Christ, like take it.
Then the video stores got smart and started selling those after they took them down. Because I remember that there was always be like. You know, you'd go there and like, oh, there's a whole tube of movie posters you look at of like they're already been picked over. Like the only thing is like, you know, oh, that darn cat. Great. Yay.
Hey, guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.